Hi, everyone. My name is Krista. I'm an alcoholic. And Jonathan, I'm nervous, too. My sobriety date is May 24th, 1987. And for some reason, this just doesn't get easier for me. My husband just gave me a little pamphlet, and I'm sure it's not conference approved or anything like this. But it's so simple. It's hysterical. Get up and pray. Get dressed. Don't drink. Go to meetings. Live the steps. Get a job. Go to work. And help someone. Pray. And go to bed. And that truly is representative of my program. It now has just become my life. It's kind of hard. It's harder for me now to categorize it because it's all blending in now. But it's very easy for me to remember what it was like. And I was the girl chasing down and visiting the little boy that was in military school. So I was after that. You know, that's how sick I was. And drinking young. That's what I love about the Tampa Bay Young People's Group. You know, I was 23 years old when I got here, but I very well could have been 18. I certainly was getting into trouble, blacking out, not drinking like, well, I shouldn't. Well, at 18, I was legal to drink. But from third grade to 18, I was not legal to drink. And I wasn't drinking appropriately, even if I was. It was interesting. So, all right, what didn't I tell you? I have a home group. It's Sober at 7, and now it's located in Ruskin, Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock, and I welcome you all there. I want to thank Stephen, there he went, and congratulations. Thank you for having me speak. It is an honor. I don't particularly like it, but it's a testament to the program, you know, that the people up here speaking are sober. When you get asked up here, it really is an honor. I never, ever thought this would be my life. Not for one moment. I couldn't get past what are we doing, you know, to get drunk tonight? Or who are we going to steal from? Because you, when you're that much younger, you've got to steal all your alcohol and whatever you're doing from others. Or con people into buying you drinks, and that certainly happened too. But so I'm from a family of 11. My father died when I was 7. My mom remarried. So I was second youngest of 11 kids, which was very easy to disappear. You weren't watched. You know, nobody had a thumb on you. It's almost impossible for parents to gather around and coordinate 11 kids running in and out of the house with different schedules and different age groups. So I was able to do what I wanted to do, and no one was really looking. It was good, and it was also bad. I do like structure. I never had structure. My mom used to want to be my friend, and I was desperate to have a mother in some kind of weird way. It's hard to explain it. I wanted it, yet I didn't. I had it all around me. I often reference this. When I was growing up, I had a lot of siblings around. I had parents. I had teachers. I had neighbors. I had people in the church. All of those people that could help me, that could ask questions for me, that could guide me, that could teach me how to live right, or teach me morals, they were all there. If I wasn't listening, I was so enamored with taking alcohol or whatever it was and changing the way I felt, as opposed to, I guess, what you're supposed to do when you grow up and just learn how to live and participate in life and participate in school and participate in the neighborhood. I was always just taking the booze, running to the you know, out into the woods to drink and play in the forts and do whatever we did. So I grew up that way, and once I entered middle school, it was a lot easier. Hang around with a little bit older. Drugs were easier to get than alcohol, but alcohol was always my drug of choice. And now when I think back on it, it was probably the most powerful drug I ever ingested because it changed me instantly. It put me into blackouts almost, I don't know, a high percentage of the time. I was operating in a blackout, which was a good thing because when you're throwing up all over the place and, you know, going to the bathroom, wherever, you don't want to remember that stuff. I had friends that would tell me, nice of them. So in middle school, kind of got by, doing my thing. In high school, it really began. It was much easier, even though I look at high school kids now and I go, oh, my God, just don't drink now. You know, you're so young and little. But in high school, that's what you did. Partied on the weekends, partied during the week. I worked at a job that allowed me to drink nightly. There was a running tap, and I used it all the time. Quarters was my favorite game. Just literally living in blackout. I could still operate. You guys know what that's like. Blackout, you're still doing what you need to do. You're still working. You're still being an employee, stealing, taking from, you know, giving out pizzas for free. You want some drinks? Yeah, here's a pitcher, you know, along with whatever you were ingesting. But that life suited me, and it was there. Everybody, well, most everyone at the pizza parlor was doing the same thing. Again, blackouts, getting into trouble. Not real trouble, if you will. I consider real trouble getting locked up or getting pulled over, anything like that. I didn't get caught that way, but I did get caught by people, whether it was friends or, you know, my mom just shouting at me that I smelled like a GD brewery. And those kind of things hurt. I mean, it really did. It hurt me. And I it's feast and famine speaking, I'll tell you. I just got asked to speak, and I just spoke last Friday night. And I was talking about an experience in middle school where the kids used to tell me that their parents didn't want them hanging out with me. That's how bad of a kid I was. And it crushed me. Not to the point that I was going to change, but it crushed me inside. And there was nobody that I could turn to and talk to about it. I mean, I took that information, held on to it. It shaped and molded me, and it made me, you know, it sickened me. I just didn't want to deal with it, but I wouldn't share it with anyone. And then in high school, the same thing. I mean, it was just the same thing. I wasn't a good influence, always felt like a bad person, and it wasn't until I got into the program that I was told by you all that I was a sick person getting well. I was not a bad person getting good, and I always thought that I was the bad person. Anything that I did, even if I did the same exact thing as my best friend, and she would like, la, 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 I told my mom about blah, 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 and I'm like, you what? You know, it affected me because I was always trying to make it look like I was okay, make it appear that I was doing well in high school, did gymnastics, you know, did cheerleading, all those things to make it appear, kept my grades up, that everything was okay, and it totally wasn't. You know, I couldn't wait for the next drink. I couldn't wait to go to work to drink more. I could barely make it to school on time. I wasn't good at skipping. Just one of those things. I was too afraid of getting caught, I think, because I never really got confronted with whatever I did. So I tried to avoid that at all costs. But anyway, so I went through high school. I barely graduated too, and I didn't get that until you said it. I barely graduated. I was in summer school my last year. I don't even know why I was in summer school. I guess I failed a class. I'd never been in summer school my entire life. And what did I do during summer school? This is when I skipped. Skip summer school, go to this guy's house, and we get just totally wasted. Get me back to summer school, or get me back to the house when I was supposed to be. It was a mess. And I remember getting confronted about that a little bit, and I guess I tried to straighten this ship or right the ship, and I ended up graduating high school, and I also had half days. my half day was going to college full time. And I did that. I don't even remember much about it. I just remember I had to do that. I had to do that in order to get military funding to continue on at college. So after my high school year was over, I went into college. Didn't know why I was there because everybody else was doing it. Didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. Didn't have any goals. Didn't have any dreams. My goal was I wanted to get to college and drink some more. And so I did. And I never made it through even the first year of college. No clear mind. No grades. I barely existed. It was the same thing. The blacking out. Sleeping around. And I always had boyfriends. And I didn't want to be the bad girl. I didn't mean to break your heart, or I didn't mean to embarrass you profusely. I didn't mean to do these things, but they happened. And as I look back, I could not make the appropriate decision when I put alcohol in my system. Could not make that decision. And I liken it to the don't drink and drive message. Well, if you're talking to an alcoholic, it doesn't make sense. Because as soon as I drink, I'm going to drive. I'm going to do whatever. I can't make the decision not to. So it works for normal people or maybe normal drinkers. But I don't understand any of that. And so I went through high school, got to college, failed at that, came home. And that was my first turning point. But I didn't really know it yet. That was the first time I really knew that alcohol was affecting my life, that I had to get a grip on it somehow, or else I was going to kill myself. That was the option. I mean, I was down to that, and I'd almost died. I was in the hospital. I was not taking care of myself. Literally, the doctor said, "I don't even know how you're standing up straight." And so I got help for that. And as soon as I left that hospital, boyfriend came and picked me up. I'm like, let's go, and off I went. But that thing in the back of my mind said, okay, you've got to start controlling it now. You've got to start eating bread before you go out, not drinking as much before you go out to the bars. Go into the bars and not always having a drink. You know, maybe having a Coke or water, or I don't even know what I thought, the cranberry juice, but not no alcohol. And it just never worked. When the alcohol got in my system, I had to have more. And I also talk about my little triangle of friends is I had my girlfriends that I hung out and partied with. And when I wasn't with them, I was with my boyfriend, partied just the same as I did. And when I wasn't with either of those, I was with my sister, partied with her. We were the only two that alcohol did it for us in the family. So out of 11, there was two of us. I didn't grow up with alcohol in the house. My parents didn't drink. It ran in my family, but it was never right there around me. So I don't necessarily understand all that, but I loved being at your house when your parents drank. I loved the fact that you guys had liquor cabinets. And we could sneak. So during the years that I came home from college, didn't know what I was doing except trying to control my drinking, didn't know that Alcoholics Anonymous existed, didn't really even know rehabs existed, didn't know there was any help because I never asked for help from anybody in my life ever. I always thought I was supposed to know how to do this life thing. I was supposed to know. Everybody else seemed to be tripping along, knowing why they were going to school, knowing why they were babysitting, knowing why they were doing that or helping the family, doing all those normal things. My mind didn't go there. So it just never got any better. And I knew I wasn't ever going to commit suicide. I was too chicken for that, although that's where I wanted. I just wanted it to be over. I didn't want to face the lies. I didn't want to face the nightmare that I felt that I had created. And I had created all of this. Everything that I did, I created. And I didn't know any other way until I got here. So the big event was another weekend at the beach. I grew up in Maryland for the most part. I was born in Florida, but I grew up in Maryland. And we were at the beach, girlfriends, sister, much the same as any other weekend, totally trashed, destroying things, driving when you shouldn't have been, hanging out with anybody who would let us. We didn't care. And I remember that one night sitting, it was early on in the weekend, and I'm sitting at the bar, and I'm doing shots, and I didn't feel like obliviated. I know that I was completely trashed, but I didn't feel it. And then I just forgot about that and, you know, carried on the rest of the weekend. But the weekend, but by the time that I had gotten home, my best friend had disowned me completely. And I thought it was her fault. She'd get over it. And I was kind of talking to my mother about her and talking to my mother about, well, my sister, she's got a real problem. We need to help her. She drinks too much. Never even subconsciously thinking I was talking about myself. She's a therapist and read kind of right through that. And it was an opportunity. She told me about Alcoholics Anonymous and asked if I would go. And I didn't know what that meant, but I knew I didn't want to go. I didn't want to ask for help, I guess. You know, I didn't want to show up in a room full of people that I didn't know. Didn't even know where Alcoholics Anonymous was being held. Didn't know what she did, but I knew I didn't want to go. She said, why don't you go to the library and check something out and read about it? So I said, well, I could do that. And this was my first conscious God moment. I know God was carrying me all throughout. I know that just to the bottom of my, you know, of my feet. But that particular night, I walked over neighbor's house across the street. My mom said, this person is in AA. And I put my shoes on and I walked across and I knocked on that door and I asked for help. And that was the first time I asked for help consciously. And so the AA ride began. And it has been awesome. I mean, it's life. It certainly is life. But it's nothing that I ever envisioned. And that was just the beginning of asking for help. That's kind of been the theme of my sobriety, is when I ask for help, good things happen. And it doesn't necessarily just mean in AA. If I ask for help at work, good things happen. If I ask for help at home, good things happen. If I shut it all down and stuff it all in, nothing happens except I get sick. I liken that to when I came in here, and I did feel sick. I felt like I was this black hole. I wore sweatpants, I think, for the first 3 months. I couldn't speak my name and say I was an alcoholic without crying. I remember going, you know, leaving the clubs, you know, not the clubs, the AA clubs. Leaving the club and going home and getting in the shower and sobbing, just sobbing because I hurt so much. And every little time that I asked for help, every little step that I did cleared away that black hole. And started filling me with light. And, you know, and I started having a relationship with God. And I never had that before. The man that my mother remarried when I was 8 years old is a minister. And I still didn't have God in my life. I didn't have anybody. I believed in God and it ended there. There was no try to do the right thing. There was no asking for help. There's no sense of feeling my higher power from people that enter in my life. There was none of that. And I struggled with that when I first got in here. I struggled because everybody seemed to have, I knew you all had shiny eyes, all looking good, and you're talking so that I understand it. talking about alcohol, so I know you know what it does. I know you know how it makes you feel. But then you're on the in the same breath, you're talking about how you're not drinking anymore and how you're doing this or doing that or feeling a feeling. I never felt feelings. I shoved them all down. I couldn't even identify them when I got in here. And I really needed a sponsor just to tell me what kind of feelings I was feeling. Oh, that looks like jealousy. You know? Oh, you might be sad, you know? Imagine that. I when my dad died, and they told me, and I just, and they said, it's okay to cry. Then I broke down. So it's kind of how I was, always, just not really in touch with my emotions and feelings. Now I cry in the program, I cry, but it is from absolute, unbelievable love. Just love. It blows my mind all the time. When I walked into this room tonight, I haven't been here in quite some time, and I was sharing this with Monica, it is so awesome to see so many familiar faces in this room, because you're not out there drinking. You are still here. You're still sober. You're growing up. You're getting an opportunity to actually live and participate in this world and this life. And it is the most beautiful thing ever. So for every, you know, for all those people that picked up the chip, keep coming back. Do what these people do. Do what we do. 25 years later, and I'm still participating in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is my life. It has saved my life. You can't repay something like that. And why would I ever want to change it? So I got hooked up with a sponsor and started working the steps, started getting through all that pain that had been bottled up for years and years and years, even though I was only 23 at the time. And I felt so old then. Oh, my goodness. Started little by little. And really, it was, again, asking for more help, not just from my sponsor, from the people in the program. Go into step meetings. You know, if I was working step three, I'd go to step three meetings, talk about step. Half the time I just ended up at the meeting and they were talking about it. I'm like, how did you guys know I was on step three? You know, how did you know I was on four? Just wanting more and more information, wanting to do it right, wanting to hear your experience for the first time in my life, wanting to hear your experience, wanting to hear how you did it. That, you know, that floored me. So I tripped along through my first couple years and, you know, hung out. And what a joy that is to hang out with people for the first time in your life and go to dances. Oh, go to dances. I couldn't even go to a bar and dance, trashed. And I'm going to dances with nothing and you guys want me to dance? I smoked a lot of cigarettes, drank a lot of Coke, and yes, you can get hangovers on Coke and cigarettes, and made it through, and made friendships, and it, you know, it was just that beginning that everything has just started building on, and going to workshops and getting involved when people told me to get involved, you know, when people said, come to this house meeting, we're going to talk about the convention, want you to participate in it. I had no idea what you're talking about. I followed along. I was mostly just like a little dog. I would just follow around wherever you went, do whatever you told me to do. Okay. And it wasn't until I actually came to Florida, that things started making sense to me. And I got to Florida because my husband went out. I got married in the program, and that was a wonderful thing, marrying somebody in the program. And he was not done yet. So he went out and decided a geographic would be in order. We were married 1 year. Let's go to Florida. And my sponsor and everybody around me don't you dare go. Put him in a rehab. Don't you dare go. I'm like, I can't put him in a rehab. What am I going to do? You know, somebody wants to drink. They are going to drink. And I said, well, look, I can divorce him just as easily in Florida as I can in Maryland. So I came down to Florida with a drinking husband. And tell you what, you really have to work a program. No matter what, not take a drink. And it evolved in and out of a couple. You know, there were good times and back on sobriety with both of us. And he went out a couple more times. And I moved out a couple times because I was in fear. I was then in fear of my own sobriety. I can't tell you why or how, but God had a hand in all of this, and he's now been sober for over 10 years, and I have been sober this whole time and never gotten, you know, never had to pick up more than that one, you know, that one white chip. And it's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing the transformation that I thought was happening. But now that I see the transformation, it really is happening. And it's due to working the steps. I mean, there's nothing else is due to working the steps all the way through. And there were a couple times I wanted to stop at the steps. I wanted to take my time. I wanted to check it out a little bit more before I was willing to really do them, you know, do the next one. And my sponsor would say, if you don't do this, you are going to get drunk. And that is the last thing that I want to do. I didn't want to go back to that pain because I now had started feeling a little bit of serenity. I remember the very first time I felt serenity, didn't know what it was. Again, I'm not really in touch with my feelings. And I came to the club and I'm walking through the door and somebody said, how you doing? And I was in that space where when people in AA program asked you how you were doing, I no longer said fine. I told you how I was doing. And I was telling this person, it was like I put my comforter up around me and just felt like I was on a cloud. It was like the most perfect feeling. They were like, yeah, like serenity. I'm like, oh, yeah. I didn't feel it then, but I felt it that one time. I was like, okay, so how do I keep, you know, keep expanding that, feeling it a little bit longer? And, you know, and it's part of the, you know, the balancing act of being in AA. You know, not dipping your toes out here and seeing if I can do a little bit of lying or a little bit of something else. You know, being right on in AA, present in the moment, doing what I know to be doing, you know, doing my prayers, doing my meditation, helping others, going to meetings, working the steps, incorporating the principles behind the steps in my life, doing all of those things and carrying it not only into my, you know, family life, but carrying it into my work life. And I never imagined I'd ever have a career. I never did go back to college. It just was not for me. But I feel like I'm a part of a company now. I feel like I contribute to the workforce. I feel like I contribute to my own family. Now I love the fact that I come from a family of 11. It is so cool. Before it was just chaos, and I was lost in that chaos. Now it is very cool. It is just a very cool thing. I can talk to my mother, and I don't need her to be any particular way. I don't need people to be any particular way except how they actually are. And that's a freedom. It's a freedom that's come from this program. It's a freedom that's come from living in reality. You know, my whole thing was I dream a genie and want to blink and boop, change everything, change me, change you, change the world. I don't feel a need to do that. I really don't. And I think I'm winding up. I'm not quite sure of anything else that I want to say, or I don't know why I get nervous, because I truly believe that I'm going to get up here and I'm going to let God speak through me, whatever I'm supposed to say. And hopefully it connects with just one person in the audience. And hopefully that one person, you know, is hearing something that will keep them sober one more day. And that's all we have is just, you know, just keep building one more day and one more day One thing I do remember very vividly is I don't want to die a drunk. I just don't want to do that. And now I have too much, not material things or anything like that. I have too much of those good things that come through the program that I don't want to give up for anything. And I know that I could put one drink in my body and it would all be over. And I would be a mess and I would be that scared little girl and I would be have that hole in my heart. And I probably wouldn't be lucky enough to die. I'd probably have to endure it and just the agony with it. And I don't want to hurt like that anymore. So please stay. Thank you for allowing me to come and share at your home group. And love you all.